Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the October 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, the countryside seems to be starving for corn, even in the midst of some farmer selling. Why? And what does it mean for those that have already closed the bin door for safekeeping? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with John Bondurant from Bondurant Futures. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists in studio today include Alan Dearden of AgriView from Morton, Illinois, Dell Durkles of AgriVisor out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do visit us online if you have the opportunity at WILLAG.org. There you can pledge your financial support. Commodity Week is, of course, produced by Public Radio. 40% of our income comes from you, our listeners. Well, let's start today's discussion with this question, Dell Durkles. We have very tight corn bases, many overs across the countryside. Over the past week, we've heard that producers who are still in the field chucking corn have actually decided to sell across the scale, and the basis remains extraordinarily tight. Why?
Well, you know, you really have so much that's already been committed and pushed into the pipeline by farmers. And after a harsh price break like we've had in here, and prices still well off the summer highs, a lot of them have just decided, hey, we're going to shut the bin door, see where things go as we move on into the winter months. And I think they tend to read some of the confusion about the USDA numbers as being the USDA must be wrong and we'll get some adjustments that might be favorable to prices. So, again, I just think they're playing for higher markets.
Mike Zuzulo?
I think additionally to that, you probably have not gotten into the main push of harvest, Todd, especially when it comes to some clients that I've talked to in the last week or two have said my moisture's high. I probably don't have the drying capacity or the space to dry it myself. I'm going to probably start having to go to the elevator. So I think maybe the time for futures rallying and basis appreciation together is probably coming to an end the more we wind into more deeper harvest.
Ellen Dearden.
I think we've got growers who are strictly flat price sellers, and they're not seeing what they think is the magic price, whatever the magic price is for them, $6.80, $7, I don't know. But the tight basis is shaking out some hedge corn, but how much hedge corn is there?
December corn this week had a high of $6.65.5, a low at $6.30.25, settlement price at $6.49.25, up 9.25. Remember, we give you the day, the electronic open outcry, and overnight, all in one shot. December of next year at $6.03.25 was up a penny and three quarters week over week. Producers, in your opinion, should or should not take advantage of pricing their corn now?
Well, we had a sell-off on Friday, a pretty sizable sell-off into the late session, but we'll see some upside action in this upcoming week, I should think. And I think producers ought to be jumping all over this basis.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I like the basis side. I think as far as the futures go, Todd, I think I'm going to still hold off for cash sales at that 682 level, that gap in the Dease corn. But if we don't come through this next weekend with the Europeans and the way Ellen's talking about the close on Friday, I think freshening up some bought puts in the short term would be something I'd be looking at.
I won't disagree with what Mike says. You know, I don't mind taking advantage of some of the basis at this particular point, unless I got the room and I'm storing it on farm, and then it's kind of a question, but going into commercial in particular. But, you know, I'm not interested in really doing too much flat pricing right now or doing too much that would involve locking in my futures component. I think I'd take a shot, take a risk, and see if we can get some better markets over the next 3 to 5 weeks.
Why?
Part of it's really technical nature at this particular juncture. Part of it is also looking temporarily here. We've taken the pressure off the wheat market at this time with dryness in the southern plains, wetness in the eastern corn belt, where we're now getting some people talking about we may not get soft red plantings. And if we temporarily lift the weight of wheat off the corn market here, corn can probably percolate a little bit. Then again, like we've said, none of us really see farmers real anxious about selling the breakdown here when you look at flat price stuff.
Well, and if you take Europe off the table too, Todd, I think you have the two things going for you. The funds are already very, very backed off their long, their net long position. Some are down, I think, the lowest since 2008 in corn or beans or both. We're down at 7-8 month lows in other grains. And that's not just hedge funds. That's also in index-related pension funds. They cut a massive amount back in August. And the other thing I think goes back to is what happens with China. I think producers are probably watching to see what's going to happen with China, and I think that's a worthy thing to do. The last thing I'd be looking at is the big breaks in corn have always come, this year at least, the big breaks have come at the end of March, the end of June, and the end of September. It's fund-related with these big breaks, so I'd say hold off, you know, and see what can happen.
I think this year looks a whole lot like 1980, and in that year we rallied out of an October low. I mean, it was a short crop year, but I think this market right now is acting like it's a short crop.
Is it not a short crop?
Well, look at the basis. I mean, the basis is you know, acting like it's a short crop, so.
1980 is scary, though, because we broke right around Thanksgiving that year, and I mean broke hard.
Thanksgiving. Yeah. I mean, the day after Thanksgiving, we never looked back.
Right.
Why did it break? Does anybody remember?
I don't want to hear it.
That you know, the one thing you go back to 1980.
I just got what you didn't want to hear. It took me for a second.
You know, we had a classic short crop year that year. And, you know, back then when we had classic short crops, you basically had markets that followed the old axiom, the old adage, short crop, long tail, and you peaked out and you priced all your demand out with high prices early in the year. And we did have high prices there in the fall of 1980, corn and beans both.
And Volcker came in and started raising rates like crazy, and he essentially shut down the risk market because the interest rates and the dollar started to shoot up. I mean, it's the 80-83 model was a classic recession model, double dip model, where recessions usually bring on a strong dollar. And even without the fund investment community, that probably had a lot to do with it, too.
We haven't talked about double dip for, only a month. But
a month's a year in these markets, right?
But is that possibility back, do you think?
Well, I thought just the way the market acted this week that we were talking about double dip recession, and then all of a sudden here comes the stock market back. So it's all Europe-related. It's all technical. You know, the fundamentals is almost out the window.
Does the extra 250 million bushels that the rest of the planet is going to produce that showed up on those reports, does that make much of a difference? It's roughly speaking about the same amount of exports that we will lack in the United States in the coming year, if USDA is correct.
I don't think that the fundamentals are all that market moving at this stage of the game.
What do you mean by the extra 250 million bushels?
Well, last time around when we came, the last set of numbers on global production showed that China, Ukraine, some of the former Soviet states will produce about 250 million bushels more corn than expected just the month prior to that. And we're down 235 on our exports year over year to 1.6 billion in the coming marketing year.
When,
in this marketing year.
when you look at the data we got in October on the world, if you look at the world outside of the U.S. and China to see what's going on out in the foreign base, I don't remember numbers right off the top of my head, but I do remember this. If you get outside of those two countries out in the world, wheat and coarse grains combined, because wheat is a feed too. You have to acknowledge that, especially this year when you look at the price relationships. We actually are going to see ending stocks in those countries outside of the U.S. and China go up year on year. The last report, they were going to go down, and we are nowhere near as tight as we were back in 06, 07, 07, 08. We are very comfortable out there. Top that off with the fact that we've had Russia that's been a fairly aggressive seller. Finally, this last week, Ukrainians eliminated their export duties, and that's going to bring them into the picture. And they have a history. They sell and sell hard and keep selling. So you got a low price leader that's going to be selling down in the world, and it's going to be a problem for the corn export business.
So I suppose my point with the question, Mike, was even without the double dip or the 1980-like functions of the marketplace, is there fundamentally enough coarse grains on the world stage now to really meet demand for those products in the coming marketing year?
Yeah, I think Dale's 100% right on the wheat side. And I think the other thing goes back to that double dip recession will probably bring safe haven buying into the dollar. So that also kind of kicks in an extra negative. And I think to answer your original question about a double dip, at the end of this past week, and part of the reason why we rallied sharply in the outside markets was QE started to be talked about from the Fed. So if the Fed's talking about QE or some faction of the Fed's talking about QE, obviously they're a little bit worried about a double-dip recession. So that's my answer to you.
You know, just of immediate importance out there for the listeners is to remind themselves that on Sunday we have a meeting of leaders in Europe regarding their plan to resolve their banking crisis, the debt issues. And there's going to be a second follow-up meeting to that on Wednesday, because whatever plan they do or don't come together with, Merkel's got to go back to the parliament in Germany and then go back and get it approved if they in fact come up with a plan. And I guess I'm not necessarily extremely hopeful at this point yet, but it's a couple of things for listeners out there to keep their eye on.
December wheat this week at a high of $6.49 and a half, a low at $6.13. Settlement price up 9 and a quarter at $6.32. July, the harvest month for next year, $6.97 and a quarter, up a quarter of a cent. Soybeans, November contract, $12.72, the high, the low at $12.01 and a quarter. Settlement price there at $12.12 and a quarter, down 57 and three quarters from the previous week. November beans at $12.08 and three quarters of a cent, finished 42 and a quarter cents lower. Soybeans are down a long ways than they were at $14 and above marketplace, but they tend to bounce or have. Is there another bounce left in the market for beans, or is the pressure too great from the outside fundamentals?
I think we're looking at a couple of things. One is that we do have South America planting right now. Brazil's a little more than 10% planted. We've got a real disconnect between beans and corn. Look at what these corn-bean ratios have gone into. You talk about a screwed-up deal. New crop corn, new crop beans, they're 2-to-1. 608 and 1208 or something along that line. I mean, you know, beans are undervalued in relationship to corn right now.
You know, and it's interesting because I was thinking on the way over here, I talked to a client from Paraguay on the way over here, and what Ellen was talking about with that bean-corn ratio is that the USDA report was bullish beans, bearish corn, and that was the supply side. But we've been trading demand probably because that's why the corn's been held up, with, along with weather, the harvest delays, the Southern Plains weather, and the wheat. We've been trading more demand, and the bottom line for the beans is they've gotten disappointing demand news out of China. That, coupled with the copper market and what's going on in Asia, I think is 80% of why the beans have not been able to move up with the corn and wheat, Todd. So to me, I look at it half full. I think the beans have the biggest discount at the end of last week.
Last year at this time and the previous year at this time, China had been in the market in a big way. I think the numbers from last year to this year suggest they're off by 25% in their import of U.S. soybeans.
When you look at, I don't remember China specifically, but when you look at the aggregate sales on the books in here right now, the sales total puts us right on track roughly to the pace we need to reach to get the current USDA target. The key at this particular juncture, though, is really looking at at China in particular, and this is the time of year where China business tends to step up. It's come a little later this year, or we haven't seen it in much so far yet this year, but they've been able to draw off the big South American crops, and so we've been able to put it off. A week ago, we had them on their on a holiday, so they were out of the market. I think going forward, it's a matter that we really need to see China step up to the plate and the world as a whole step up to the plate and get more aggressive buying beans, because we're in a window here for the next number of weeks where we ought to see bean sales week on week average somewhere between 50, 55 million a week at least to get those sales pumped up, because if South America would have another decent crop, you know, we fall off to low levels again.
Best piece of advice on soybeans for producers?
Don't do any selling at this stage of the game.
On a hard 2008 type break, Todd, I'll be re-owning 11 bushels.
Right now, cyclic parameters suggest that the early October low was a good low, and we ought to be up for the next few weeks.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always dial in your support if you'd like to call us now with a pledge at 217-244-9455, or if you listen to us online at willag.org, just hit that big red button up in the right-hand corner of the page.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Commodity Week, as you probably already know, is a production of a public radio station, and that means we involve you, our listeners, in a couple of unique ways. One, we like to hear from you. Two, we like to hear from you when you write a check to us as well. That's 217-244-9455 in order to support the programming. The agricultural programming that comes to you from WILL, Illinois Public Media, WILLAG.org, or WILLAG.org. Dave and I really do appreciate that you listen, but it takes a bit more than that to keep this programming running. In fact, about 40% of our budget comes from you. Yeah, 40% of our budget comes from you, so you need to write out a check and send it to us right now. 217-244-9455. We work for you. We try to make sure the programming is important to you, that it works for you as well. That's why we do markets and weather, and we do it better, we hope, than anybody else. And we hope that's why you listen. If it is, open up your wallet right now. Get ready to write that check or do a Visa, MasterCard, or American Express at 217-244-9455, or you can fill it out online. Go to willag.org. That's our normal website. Up in the right-hand corner, there's a big red button that says Will Pledge on it. And that's what we'd like you to do right now. 217-244-9455.
This is the October 21st edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio, our panelists include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Lafayette, Indiana, and Ellen Dearden at Ag Review in Morton, Illinois. On the phone line from Memphis, Tennessee, is John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. John, thanks for taking the time with us today.
My pleasure.
Double dip futures, and do you think it'll happen?
I think we're going to have a double dip recession. I thought your panelist discussion earlier was terrific, and maybe all of this really comes down to China. It sure looks like China's slowing and could possibly be a hard landing. And that bears on all things, and I think we should all remember that China is not a growing population. It's actually got negative population growth. So a lot of question marks about China.
You know, this is Dale Durkholz, John. You know, and you speak about China. What's your take on what's going on in Europe? What do you think they're ever going to come to grips with the issues they have over there? Or are we going to be working at this for another few months yet?
I think we're probably going to be working on it a long time, but whatever they do, it sure sounds like they're going to have to cut spending, whatever they do. I mean, they've sort of reached the point of the social welfare state can't pay for the promises they've made. So they're going to have to cut back, and that's not good for consumption of anything. And look at copper prices, for instance. They are really falling down. That's industrial production.
John, going back to China, the most official statistics we have, or latest ones on their hog inventories, is they're up 1.3% versus August. That's the seventh month increase. The natural inclination, if you trust those numbers, is they're going to probably not buy too much more pork eventually, yes or no? And would they be ramping up in buying more, you know, beans, meal, and corn like the market is betting on? Is that something that you can stand on, you think?
I don't want to bet on that. I'm not bullish on China. The whole Chinese situation is scary. We've got banking. The banking system is obviously very, very broke, and you can look at the Chinese bank stocks, and you got regional banks that are in trouble, regional governments in trouble. So the whole thing, China, frightens me.
John, where's the confidence in this market right now? Do you see any?
Well, my point of view is the stocks in all positions report was almost impossible for the crop year that we just ended. Total feed consumption, that's corn, wheat, and coarse grains, was down 9.6%, and yet production of the same things in beef, pork, and poultry was up 2%. So I question those numbers a great deal. I think that the corn usage is probably close to 500 million bushels understated between last year's fourth quarter and what they're estimating for the coming year. So corn is really, really tight as far as I can see. But confidence, I think we're all lacking confidence because of all the tremendous volatility, not just in stocks, but also in commodities. We're just seeing these huge moves out of the blue.
Yeah, I just came out of, this is Dale again, John, and I spent Monday in Chicago at the USDA data users meeting, and that issue certainly came up, and no one has any solid answers, but one of the thoughts that was kind of presented was the possibility that it's not with the June and September reports necessarily, but maybe we actually undercounted inventories on farm going back in the December and the March reports themselves that could make an adjustment. But right now there's no way for the guys in the USDA to make that adjustment. They're stuck with what they've got as far as the stocks numbers. Looking at another twist that you'd have an insight on, we're in the midst of planting the winter wheat crop for next year, and we've been dry in the southern plains, although we did get some nice rains in a lot of places a couple weeks ago. Now there's talking the eastern corn belt, especially out in Ohio and Michigan, with the rains that we may not get it in. What's your take on what we're going to see as far as acreage on wheat this fall?
In my area, it looks like it might be slightly lower, although I'm going to be slightly higher. But we're planting wheat down here. The 809 or whatever, the 8th guarantee for the insurance is certainly a big deal for a lot of people, and people taking insurance. So that probably means I would think the wheat acreage is going to end up somewhere around and change to slightly higher.
One more question on China. Does the factors that have been happening in Washington, D.C. With their currency and allowing it to float and what the Senate would like them to do, does that make much difference to you?
I think the whole China thing makes a big difference because all the commodity bullish bets are based on China. And if that story is not right, that's troublesome. There were some stories in the Wall Street Journal last week about one of the high Chinese officials asking him about the 9 and 10% GDP gains. And he says, oh, yeah, sure, that's paper GDP. And he says, what do you mean by paper GDP? He says, well, you know, that's the bureaucrats put that out. If you want to know what real GDP is, watch electrical production. And he says, a lot lower. So maybe the 10% gains that we've been looking at are not really real. It's sort of a disturbing thought, too.
John, going back to the Southern Plains weather, how are you handling 2012 wheat hedges right now?
I'm big hedged, real big hedged, probably 85% hedged. I'm also hedged 13 wheat, and I agree hardly with Ellen that 12 corn futures are way out of line and are a tremendous hedge. We're going to have a lot of wheat corn acreage down here next year because a lot of people sold 675 and 650 September corn futures, and they're going to sit on them and deliver. So I expect, and we've got a really bad fundamental case in cotton where we're going to have to shed about 3 million acres because we just got an enormous supply of cotton, 48% world carryover. So the U.S. is going to shed a lot of corn, of cotton acreage, and it's probably going to land in corn because of the spread differentials with beans.
Do you have a concern about bean acres in South America not rising and seeing more corn acres?
To some extent, but I was just with a whole bunch of Argentinian farmers lately, and just this week, and they expect a slight increase in bean acreage and a bigger increase in corn, and then new land coming into production out of pasture, et cetera. So I think the South American bean acreage is probably unchanged. Cotton acreage maybe a little down, and corn acreage up a fair amount.
Back to the money issue again that we've talked about sporadically here. There was numbers out today that Barclay Capital saw about $3 billion move out of, quote-unquote, we'll just say index funds during the third quarter, and that was after about a $3 billion loss in monies through the index funds in the second quarter. Do you think money is really just moving away from commodities and just wants to stay away?
Well, I kind of get the feeling it's the same way for the stock market. It's this huge up and downs that are scaring people, and it's going to be hard to get them back. You know, the long-only index fund was a straight macro play on fiat money, which is probably still right because I haven't noticed any central banks that stopped printing money. But they have been shaken pretty badly.
You suggested that you had big hedges on for wheat. Have you got your hedges on for corn, too, for next year, then?
Huge, yes. Well, just for instance, my farms this year planted 800 acres of corn. This year they're going to plant 3,000. It may go higher. And I've hedged all of it, 100% of that 3,000, around 675 set futures. But, you know, we can make an awful lot of money farming at those levels. And I look at 13 corn, too. Sold some of that today.
And finally from you, what's the one thing you've been watching beyond China with most interest?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I guess exports. You know, in beans, they don't look, to me, they look like they're going to be less than the USDA estimate. Corn looks like they're going to be more than the USDA estimate. And then look at the world crops outside the U.S. It's pretty obvious that Russia and Ukraine have got a big crop, and technology transfer is the reason behind those big crops, and that's not going to change. It's going to get worse.
John, thanks so much.
Okay.
John Bondurant is with Bondurant Futures. He is in Memphis, Tennessee. Plenty of time left for some final words from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Ellen Dearden.
I think the Sunday night trade will be extremely important. It should reflect the EU meeting having taken place earlier that day, but it won't be a done deal yet.
And Mike Zuzula?
You know, last week was really a heavily technically oriented trade, Todd. I have a suspicion that next week will be extremely heavily fundamentally traded. And I think that between the exports and what Ellen was talking about is probably going to drive our trade. Having said that, 20-day moving averages on the continuation charts are really important support to hold.
And Dale Durkles.
You know, when you look out and listening to John's comments about having stuff hedged, we got to all remember what happens if we have big crops next year, and that's a possibility too.
Dale Durkles is with AgriAdvisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. Ellen Dearden with AgriView in Morton, Illinois. And Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Thank you so very much for listening. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.